Why, yes, it is a Thursday, and that means it's time to talk to the voice of the KU Jayhawks, Brian Haney, brought to you as always by Interstate Insurance Agency. And Brian, we have a little bit more positive things to talk about after the big win in the Sunflower Showdown as KU pulls away in the second half to beat K-State 90-68. And thanks for joining us as always. I want to go back a little bit. I know it was a loss to Baylor on the road, but and I heard you talk about after the game, and I agreed watching the game as well, that even though Kansas lost to Baylor, there was a four-minute stretch that really cost them, no question about it. But you get McCullough back, he looked pretty good. Bill Self said after the game, listen, he's still a ways away, so you know that he can improve. Will his three-point shot come back? And fast forward a few days later against K-State, McCullough looked great, the team looked great, Dickinson 20 rebounds, Timberlake's hitting threes, and everybody's having a great time on senior night. And McCullough, I thought, was really important. He refound his three-point stroke, hit a couple of threes. Don't you think that KU, even though they lost, and I know a lot of coaches will sit here and go, well, I don't take a ton out of a loss, we still lost. It felt like KU gained some things, even though they lost against Baylor, that set them up for that win on Tuesday.
Absolutely. I felt like in Waco, you know, that had the feel of an Elite Eight type game because you got two teams that are projected to be three or four seeds or higher, and they're going toe-to-toe, and with the exception of a brutal stretch by the bench in the first half when they gave up 10 quick points in the span of 2 minutes, and then that 13-2 run early in the second, you know, Kansas was toe-for-toe right there with them, and in some stretches outplaying Baylor. They look like a team that could threaten for a Final Four run, and we haven't looked like that without Kevin in the previous, you know, five of the last eight games prior to Saturday. And, you know, you could talk about, well, is the ball moving better without Kevin in there? Are there things that he might be able to do in small doses that are a little more efficient? Maybe, but you're still talking about taking away one of the top scorers in all of college basketball, taking away one of the top defenders in all of college basketball, and a fifth-year veteran senior who just, as we said before, he covers the sins of so many on the defensive end of the floor because he's such a great instinctive defensive mind. And he's a guy that in his first 60 seconds on the floor in each of the last two games had multiple deflections and just covering up on the help defensive side for blow-bys. And it's just a safety net that Kansas had missed in the bulk of that previous four-week stretch. And while he was far from perfect in Waco and still far from 100% on Tuesday versus K-State in terms of explosiveness, and it's that, you know, liftoff you're lacking right now because his jump leg and his drive finishes is the left leg, and that's where he's got no juice. But to see the three-point stroke fall, to me, that's what I wanted to see more than anything. That's why when he hit his first one, I said, manna from heaven, because the game on Saturday in Waco, he was 0-for-5. And if you go back and look at his box scores in all the games that he played in the midst of the knee injury, these were some pretty brutal shooting lines. And you know, if you don't have the full bend in your knees, you don't have the full strength in your legs, obviously, you know, your jump shot is going to be a little bit off. And we saw him a lot off, you know, for the better part of the last 5 to 6 weeks. And, you know, one nice performance on Tuesday does not a comeback make, but it's a step in the right direction. And if you listen to postgame, which it sounded like you did on Saturday, I said, hey, here's a guy that came back, got knocked to the ground a couple of times, pop back up on that knee, just like you do during football season when a guy's coming back from being hurt. You want to get knocked on your tail and prove to yourself that you can pop back up. He did. Now we just got to see him hit some shots. And if in the next, you know, week before the postseason we start to see that, then, hey, we could be right back to on the course we charted 4 or 5 months ago for this team. Not as the preseason number one team to beat, but as a team that anybody would consider strong Final Four contender because you got Bill Self on the sidelines and a veteran group, 1 through 5, that with the exception of Johnny Furphy, have all lost major college minutes in major NCAA tournament runs. And each of those four, you know, distinctly are the best at what they do at their position, you know, in terms of a lot of things. With Hunter, one of the best rebounding centers in the country, but certainly in the Big 12. Kevin and DeJuan are as good as any defensive players on the perimeter of the Big 12. KJ, you're one of the best cover athletes at the four position who can guard all five spots, but just erase guys. That's a team with Hall of Fame coaching that can certainly navigate its way to Phoenix. continue to stay healthy and then just get any kind of pulse off the bench. And boy, did we certainly see that on Tuesday as well with Nick, and obviously Elmarco was good on Saturday. I'm sure we'll talk about both of those guys. But getting Kevin back just makes a world of difference in so many regards, but especially just that presence on the defensive end. Give Bill Self a chance to game plan and have guys like KJ, Juan, and Kevin involved in that defensive scheme. And I promise you, Kansas is a massive nightmare for most teams they will face prior to the Elite Eight round.
You know, I mentioned this to you a few weeks ago when we had you on the show, and I drew a comparison to the Chiefs from the standpoint of this. And for people that missed it, and that was that a lot of people wrote off the Chiefs. They said the Chiefs aren't as good this year. They're saying the same thing about KU. Oh, KU's got a decent team, but they're not what they were early in the year. They got some issues. They're not deep. They don't have this. They don't have that. Same thing they talked about the Chiefs. And I talked about those similarities, and apparently somebody in the media must have been listening to the show and took that and actually talked to Coach Self about that. And he did see some things similar to that as well, but I loved his quote. He's like, yeah, the difference is they went out and did it. Now we got to go out and do it. And there's no doubt it's a lot easier to get this accomplished, as you just referred to how dangerous this team is. You have to have a healthy or close to healthy Kevin McCullough. If you don't have that, I don't think there's a chance, and you know what, of Kansas making it to the Final Four, as you talked about. Maybe they can win a few games. But this is the team, and I see a lot of people saying, well, Kansas doesn't deserve to be ranked in the top 10, which, honestly, the way they've been playing, probably not. They're ranked 14th. That's the first time outside the top 10 in 55 polls since the mid-2021 season. And that's remarkable in itself. But at the same time, as you just, I thought, accurately pointed out, if Kansas is relatively healthy and McCullough's ready to go, and then you get Timberlake at least gaining some confidence, played great, 18 points, four threes the other night. Marco Jackson's playing better, as you referred to. Furphy's, you know, had some up and downs lately, but he's still a kid that can light it up, and he made a couple of great drives of the bucket, showing his versatility, driving it instead of just setting up for three. This is a tough matchup. Everybody wants to worry about what kind of matchups Kansas going to have in the tournament, and they're vulnerable. That is all true, but it's also true that Kansas has a team that beat number one Houston already, who you're going to play on Saturday in Houston. You beat number two UConn. You beat Kentucky. You beat Tennessee. And guess what? All the players that played in those games are still on the team.
Yeah. It really does, when you start to look at it like that, put a lot more confidence in what this team could do on a neutral floor, the right amount of preparation. You know, obviously, the second game of each two-game tournament, as Bill Self describes it, you're going to have a quicker turnaround time, you know, playing in the round of 32 or the Elite Eight or whatever. But, you know, with the ability to go out there with a bunch of 23- and 24-year-olds, with the exception of Johnny Furphy, I mean, this is a really veteran, competitive, you know, been-through-the-wars, fought-the-fights type team. And who's a better game planner and in-game adjuster and scouting report guy than Bill Self? So, honestly, you're going to sit here and throw stones as a naysayer or a Chicken Little and say you're counting out Kansas in the postseason,
yeah,
if they can prove that they're healthy heading in. Now, if Kevin's still dragging one leg behind him in Kansas City because we had to play on four straight days, I understand if you're hating on us a little bit. But if he comes back and looks explosive and gets that lift off that we talked about off his jumping leg, if Nick proves that senior night was not a flash in the pan, but rather he can get some kind of role going. I'm not expecting him to be Remy Martin or Malik Newman, although those are the comparisons that Kansas fans want to draw. But just give us a pulse. Give us, between Nick and Elmarco, a couple of big shots made per game. I'm not even asking for two threes from Nick alone. I'm saying give me one per game where he's a threat.
Yeah.
And then I'll go to battle with those other guys. Because think about it. DeJuan's 5 years removed from high school. He's a national championship-winning point guard. Hunter Dickinson, 5 years removed. Kevin McCullough, 5 years removed. K.J. Adams, you know, by the time you're a second-semester junior, you're pretty much a senior. He's won a national title. This is a heavily experienced team that has played in the best conference in college basketball. They have the net rankings number one strength of schedule because of everything you just mentioned, all those other teams we played in November and December prior to the Big 12, wins over Houston and Tennessee and Kentucky. The list goes on, and UConn, obviously. And now you're going to talk about them playing on a neutral floor. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, takes away, you know, the road component, where we were a club that when we really got exposed on the road, we had some stub our toe moments. Every team typically goes through it early in league play when you kind of start to hit that wall. But then, if you want to judge them harshly, understand that for the better part of 5 weeks with Kevin McCullough's injury, this has not been the same team. And they've not known on a daily basis what his status was going to be. I'm not just saying we can wave the magic wand and assume he's healthy the rest of March. You can't. But now that we've entered into the winter go-home mentality, an injury that is truly a matter of pain tolerance and load management, Kevin's going to make himself available most nights, if not every night, I would think, going forward. And so I think you can start to expect a little more of, this is who we are, this is what we're going to be. Now, will he be 100% healthy? That remains to be seen. But at least you're going to know on a daily basis, we've got Kevin. Because honestly, to give you a peek behind the curtain, for the last 5 weeks, they've not known one day to the next. Mm-hmm. But now you're at a point in the season where I think you'll start to find that identity. So for all those reasons, this is a team that is very dangerous. And I wouldn't want to see Bill Self in Kansas staring back at me if I was, you know, a 2 seed and this is the 3 in your region. Or if I was a 1 seed and Kansas fell to the 4 line and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, I got Bill Self and 2 midseason All-Americans and the preseason number 1 team in the country. Nobody wants to face that on the 4 line. So we'll see where KU winds up. I mean, there's still a school of thought out there that if they win on Saturday against Houston, they could hop all the way to the 2 line again, because that's another obvious, you know, quad 1 win, but it's another number 1 overall win against the top team in the country on the road. So there's a lot they could still do. At this point, it is still possible they fall to the 4 seed line if they lost Saturday and had an early exit in Kansas City. But for Kansas right now, I think what you'd really like to see is play to a strong 3 seed, that is, if not climbing to the 2 line, because that'll keep you in Omaha with the pod seeding. There was some thought by Joe Lunardi prior to Tuesday's win that Baylor might usurp Kansas for the Omaha region and Kansas be shipped out to Pittsburgh, not Kansas, Pennsylvania, for the first and second rounds. And it's not often that KU has not had favorable pod seeding. You have to go back to 2019 in Salt Lake City for the last time that was the case, since the 2021 tournament was a bubble tournament in Indianapolis. Otherwise, we're almost always within 3 or 4 hours driving distance. But that's something that can be secured in the next week. But as I said, you can climb even higher. Saturday's game suddenly becomes as important as anything you do in Kansas City, because this would be as impressive of a win, and you're going to head into it relatively rested and fresh. If you face Houston and Kansas City, more than likely it would be after 3 previous days of playing, and I don't know what we would have in the tank at that point. So we can run through the scenarios if you want, but to me, there's a lot of chips being pushed to the center of the table this week on Saturday in Houston for what it would mean in catapulting KU's tournament positioning.
Yeah, you broke it down pretty well. And you're looking at the big picture of the NCAA tournament. I want to look at the Big 12 tournament, which, of course, is coming up next week. The scenario, Kansas does have a chance, correct, to, if Baylor beats Texas Tech, KU beats Houston, then KU would get the double bye and they wouldn't have to play on Wednesday, correct?
Depending on BYU. So I think the one thing we have to look at is...
Well, BYU's behind Kansas by a game. So if KU would win, they would stay ahead of
KU
BYU.
Wins,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. If KU and BYU fall into a tie, here's the most likely scenario based on who's favored in these games.
Okay.
If it was a 4-way tie between Kansas, Texas Tech, BYU, and TCU, who all, based on the favorites, could finish at 10-8,
right,
Kansas would fall to the 6th seed.
Okay.
BYU would be the favorite, and they would grab the 4th seed. And how they do that is they take everybody's record against the other teams in the tie.
Okay.
And then if there's, in this case, BYU, I believe, would be 3-1, because understand that Kansas lost their only meeting to Texas Tech,
mm-hmm,
and lost their only meeting to BYU.
Mm-hmm.
They did win their only meeting with TCU, but based on everybody else's record against those other three in the potential 4-team tie, it would be BYU that grabs the double bye that you're talking about. and Kansas would then be behind Texas Tech, wouldn't even get the fifth seed, Kansas would be the sixth. And that really hurts because then if you win your Wednesday game, you're likely playing Baylor.
Yeah.
Beat Baylor, you're likely playing Iowa State. Mm-hmm. Beat Iowa State, it's likely Houston, and you had to go 3-2-1 on four straight days to win in Kansas City. That's why winning on Saturday in Houston is so huge if it can vault you, you know, into that double bye scenario as the four seed. But when you look at what's left for these teams within the Big 12, when I say take a look at the favorites, BYU is hosting Oklahoma State.
Right.
You would expect them to win that one.
Mm-hmm.
TCU is hosting UCF. You would expect TCU to win that one. So if Kansas loses at Houston, where they will be underdogs, then you're talking about both TCU and BYU having an even record with Kansas. And if Texas Tech were to lose to number 11 Baylor, it's in Lubbock, so hard to handicap that one. It could go either way. But that's where that four-way tie kicks in. That's where tiebreakers that you don't like kick in. So control your own destiny by going out there and finding a way to win at Houston and then hope that, obviously, Baylor gets the win in Lubbock. You don't completely control your own destiny. But the good news is that's a pretty plausible scenario in a one game, you know, win it and you're in a great spot situation, Kansas at Houston. But obviously we're asking about winning at number one Houston on their senior day, and that's much, much, much easier said than done.
Yeah, and Houston's won 8 in a row. And what are your thoughts on this game coming up on Saturday? Because, I mean, clearly Kansas took Houston to the woodshed the first time around, and I guarantee you Houston is chomping at the bit to get a little payback.
Yeah, you know, part of me was hoping – it was hard last night to know what to cheer for because – you needed BYU to lose for those, you know, tiebreaker scenarios that we just talked about last night. But if BYU had won and Houston had clinched the Big 12 outright, while they still want to win on their senior day and they still want to avenge the Kansas loss and all that, there might have been a little bit of a competitive edge taken off for Houston. But now you're talking about a team that still wants to win this thing outright and not say they had to share it at all with Iowa State, who handed them their first loss way back in week one of Big 12 conference play. And so there's a lot to play for Houston, and I think they're going to be on the one seed regardless of what happens in terms of the NCAA bracket. But in terms of the Big 12 positioning and all that, they need to beat Kansas. And so they're going to come out with their hair on fire. They're going to remember how the Jayhawks took it to them. They weren't completely healthy in that game, so I think that they have that going for them as well. And then, you know, for Houston, who was the nation's top defensive team entering that game and has continued to be after that game, they saw their defense kind of get turned on its ear a little bit with the way Kansas performed in a 78-point outburst against a team that had only been allowing 53 a game. They scored, the Jayhawks did, 25 more than what Houston had been allowing. Obviously, KU's a different team with a different energy playing inside Allen Fieldhouse. And Bill Self, when asked point blank yesterday on Hawk Talk, what's the biggest key to this team possibly contending for a national title, he says, we have to play as turned up as we do in the fog everywhere else we go going forward, manufacture our own energy and play turned up. And, you know, Kansas can take that us against the world mentality in a hostile environment on their senior night, go in as road dogs, play the role of spoiler. You know, maybe you have a chance to pop Houston in the mouth and do what you did to him the first time around. But to me, I think Shedd is the player of the year in the conference, even though he's not the top scorer on his own team. I genuinely believe that. But at the same time, I feel like if you talk about a guy that could rip your heart out and stomp on it right in front of you, it's Emmanuel Sharp. This guy is just Mr. Clutch, and I don't know what it is about him, but he pulls off more huge shots in key moments and is that guy that can catch fire and just take over a game with, like, back-to-back-to-back dagger threes. He's a guy that concerns me a ton, too. So Shedd and Sharp, it's those two for me. I realize Cryer's the top scorer, and we've seen him for years at Baylor prior to transferring to Houston, but those are the two guys that concern me the most, and obviously Kansas needs to rebound well against a very athletic Houston front line that has size and strength, and they play tough. They to play a physical brand. It will knock you off the ball before it comes to you. They'll force you 15 feet from the bucket if you're Hunter Dickinson before they can even think of lobbing it into you. Kansas needs to man up and muscle up as well. Like, it's a very physically, you know, induced type of playing style that Kelvin Sampson runs out there.
It should be pointed out that Kansas has never been worse than a 4 seed under Bill Self, and it looks like they'll be no worse than a 4 seed again this year. And I just want to point out, when I hear it's a down year for KU basketball, I have to chuckle to myself and say, God forbid you go 22-8 right now, and if you lose to Houston, 22-9, 10-8 in the conference, 15-1 at home, and you have three top 10 wins or three top 5 wins, and you're not even into your conference tournament. I mean, there are so many schools that would give up you know what to have that. It is just amazing that people actually can sit here. And it's accurate. I mean, based on the bar, how high it is at KU and Bill Self, it is pretty doggone amazing that a down year is, God forbid, a 3 seed possibly in an NCAA tournament.
Yeah, it's crazy how spoiled we are. I've never seen this mode of consistency. We've talked about it. If you include the 2020 year where a bracket didn't come out, but KU would have been the 1 seed overall, that would have been a stretch of 11 1 seeds in a 17-year period. Coach K had a stretch of 10 1 seeds in 18 years, but we've never seen 11 in 17. And then, you know, that's just looking at 1 seeds. Yeah. There were other years where, you know, Duke fell to the 6th line,
yes,
or North Carolina doesn't make the tournament, or Kentucky goes to the NIT. Kansas is not only in it every year, but they're in the top 4, and that's just remarkable.
It really is. Time for the off-the-wall question. Brian Haney, the voice of Jayhawks, and his appearance with us every Thursday, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Mill and Boyd, to call them 738-5701. What is the thing you miss most about your childhood, Brian Haney? What's the thing you miss the most about your childhood? Now that you and I are, you know, our hair is graying, we're losing some of our hair, me especially with children. What is something that you miss from your childhood?
Wow, that's a great question. Probably just spending afternoons with my grandpa. I used to always go to my grandparents' house after school every day, and we play ball in the yard together. I'd eat dinner with them every night, and then I get to see my parents after that. So it was like double dose of family every single night. And now, you know, we get swept up in our work, and obviously family dynamics are different, you know, as we age. And I miss that time at home. That, and obviously having our summers wide open. But I think more than anything, just the innocence of being a kid and having all of your relatives nearby, and all the I guess, intentional time we spent together.
Yeah.
As opposed to now, I feel like the hustle and bustle of life, and obviously you have your own kids and family to raise.
Yeah.
It's not nearly as quality or quantity of time. And I guess I wish I had a little more of both.
Amen, brother. Well said. Hey, have a great week. We will talk to you again next week during the Big 12 tournament.
All right, buddy. Thanks a lot.
Take care. Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you as always, as we said, by Anderson Insurance Agency. They have farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Mill and Boyd, or call them at 738-5701.